Connecticut.
Good afternoon. This is Erica Wesley, the Executive Director of the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, welcoming you to the April 2024 episode of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly show broadcasted to you on WPKN 89.5 FM, bringing you news and information about the arts and culture community across Fairfield County. April is known as National Poetry Month, and I am so thrilled today to bring to you a poet, a writer, a literary artist, a visual artist, and an archivist from our community that has dedicated so much of their time to creating spaces for people to write, find community with other writers, and also to just enjoy arts and culture. Shauna Melton will join us in a second, but I wanted to read a poem because if it's National Poetry Month, we certainly need to make room for some of the greatest poets that are with us today. And I have a few books of poetry, so I'm randomly picking one right now because it was so difficult for me to decide exactly which one when I thought about this earlier. If you don't know, you can go to poets.org and there's a host of information about literary art and specifically poetry that you can enjoy on your own. You can enjoy in community. There are poems that are uploaded as audio. There's some performance pieces. And I encourage you to think about ingesting poetry this month. So I just decided I'll be reading from Domestic Work by Natasha Trethewey. And one of my favorite poems in this book is called Family Portrait. It reads, "Before the picture man comes, Mama and I spend the afternoon cleaning the family room. She hums, Motown, doles out chores, and a warning. He has no legs, she says. Don't stare. I'm first to the door when he rings. My father and uncle lift his chair onto the porch, arrange his things near the place his feet would be. He poses our only portrait. My father sitting, Mama beside him, and me in between. I watch him bother the space for knees, shins, scratching air as years later, I'd itch for what's not there." This poem is so fascinating to me for many reasons. And if you've ever been privileged to see Natasha Trethewey, one of our former U.S. poet laureates, read her poetry, she does so with such beauty and such calm. But there's so much tragedy also in the backdrop of her poetry. And so this poem is about her parents that ultimately ended a relationship due to domestic violence. And years later, her father unfortunately murdered her mom. And so she writes this book of poetry reflecting on what it's like to have family and then what it's like to not have the family that you've always had because the folks who you had as parents had so much more to themselves and their character and their personality. So I highly recommend this particular book. And as we go on, I'll read some more poetry, but we are going to speak with Shauna first and talk a little bit about National Poetry Month, her journey as a writer, and the writing group that she runs. Shauna, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. I'm thrilled for this conversation because you are someone that I admire in the local creative community, and I really enjoy that you have a special lens for writing. So for the benefit of our listeners who don't know you the way that I know you, can you introduce yourself?
So my name is Shauna Melton. I am at the core a poet and a painter and an arts educator. I work in many capacities. So I am an arts educator with Arts for Learning Connecticut and Hot Schools. So I go throughout the state and visit different schools as a teaching artist. I also do that as an independent contractor. I am someone who has curated poetry stages, poetry events. I ran for now probably over 20 years an open mic called Lyrical Voices. I run the writers group with Shauna T. Melton. I do a lot of work in the community around nonviolence. I'm certified through the Connecticut Center for Nonviolence to teach Dr. King's Six Principles of Nonviolence, which I incorporate into schools as well as community organizations. And I've been honored among many awards to be the recipient of the Connecticut Arts Hero Award, and the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County in 2018 gave me the Arts and Cultural Empowerment Award. So I do a lot of community work, community leadership, building all around the arts and education.
I love it. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. Just hearing that, how do you make time? I know this is not one of the questions I sent to you, but how do you make time for your art and your creativity, serving the community the way that you do?
You know, I had this conversation recently, and one of the things I've learned is that education and, you know, teaching, presenting, sharing, that's also part of my art. You know, I'm a host, I'm a speaker, I'm a presenter. And so cultivating these workshops, cultivating presentations, showing people what I do in a very clear, laid out presentation, that's part of my art as well. Curating shows and creating physical work and poems is all woven into my daily life. There are occasions when one thing happens a little less and one thing happens a little more, and I create as much balance as I can, but I don't feel like my community work is absent of my ability to create, because I create the workshops that I present. I learn and then I present information in my own capacity and tie it into art, which is a craft within itself. Just a craft within itself. But telling stories, I do that through poetry. I do that through painting, and I do that through education. And sometimes one thing requires a little more attention than others based on where I am in my life.
That's so profound. And as someone that's trying to strike a better balance of authenticity within my creativity and my work life and all the other roles, I really admire the spectrum that you're speaking about, because I do believe that great artists like yourself are people who are able to move within space of creating and also enjoying, giving and also receiving, and nourishing while also being nourished. So I hope that anyone that's listening who also is looking to strike a balance finds some inspiration there.
I thrive the most in community, I feel. You know, when there's a lot of artists I've heard say, you know, they have to go into their studio and shut things down and close things off. And I think there's a degree of that where I don't want to hear too many poems before I'm writing a poem. I want my words to come out, or I don't want to copy anybody's work by accident. So I won't look at a lot of art when I'm feeling like I'm going to create a lot of art. Mm-hmm. But community, people, seeing art, hearing poems, those are the things that motivate me to create more, hold me accountable in a lot of ways.
I love that. So how would you describe your relationship with poetry, and when did that relationship begin?
I don't really know where it began. It's like when you know somebody and you don't know how to tell people how you met, but you know you met at some point. It's one of those things where I've always written When I was 12 years old, I went to see my grandmother, stayed at her house for like a couple of weeks in the summer. She had a pool. We would always go out there and swim. And I always wrote poems just by nature. And I forgot one. I left one at her house. And she found it and submitted it to a poetry contest, Treasured Poems of America. And I won, and I was published. And that was the first time, when I was 13, that was the first time that I really experienced my poetry existing outside of my notebook or my little bubble. And that's how I started sharing it. But I used to get in trouble because I would write all the business in my family in my journal at school. I was never somebody who filtered what they wrote or you know, hindered myself. I was always a creative writer. My mother still has a response that I wrote to Kill a Mockingbird when I was in the fourth grade. I've always written, but sharing it, that was the first time it was shared. And it's interesting. Every story I have about my art being shared has somebody else who literally took it and put it in the world for me. And then I was like, well, all right, let's go then. You know?
I love that detail, you know, because you mentioned how important community is to you. And I think there's something to be said about the times that we initiate entering community and then the times where community finds us. And so many of us, I think, have people in our lives that maybe nudged us a little bit, or in your instance, like quite literally pushed you along into this beautiful world where people wanted to celebrate your work. And so that's special.
Yeah, the poetry community has been very instrumental in my poetry and my visual work, because a lot of my starting to exhibit was at poetry reading. You know, and there are people who, like my friend Tantra, she's in Brooklyn, and Nathan, I performed in Brooklyn for years before I performed in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And they were all professional and in the world already, and I was still learning and still nervous. And they're like, you got this, sister, read your book, keep going, you know. And so that foundation of, you know, Tantra, Fasile, Epiphany, Nathan, like all these incredible poet seeing me and hearing me and saying, keep going. I did. I did. And so that's why it's been important to me to pay that forward in my own community, because there's so much talent here. And we deserve that.
100%. Yeah, I agree. So let's talk a little bit about how you do that. So for folks who are listening, Shauna runs a writing group. And it is probably one of the most nurturing spaces, I would say, that I've experienced in Bridgeport. And I'll let you describe it in your own way as the facilitator. But I remember when I first learned about your writing group, and I had just finished my master's program in creative writing, and people were like, oh my goodness, like, you have to go to Shauna's writing group. And I'm like, okay. And so I got the details of it, and I was so nervous because I just didn't know what to expect. And you continue to do this, but you have an environment that I think is so genuine and supportive and welcoming that it probably took me 60 seconds of being there. And I'm like, oh, okay, like, there's nothing to be nervous about. And I quite vividly remember leaving that writing workshop feeling unblocked. And I went home and I wrote a little bit more, whereas before going, I just felt like I didn't have the right words. So talk a little bit about this writing group that you've created from your lens and what you think its value is here in Bridgeport.
Well, the writing group is where, that's such a testament to my vision, where you say you felt and you left unblocked, right? It's a place to get your motor going, you know, to get your imagination going, to start to think about things differently, or even just think about them and release them. It's geared towards adults. I've done them with children in schools and other workshops. I've done it here with City Lights Gallery for the last 10 or so years, consistently on the first and second Saturday of each month I've also done it in other places like the New Canaan Library. Like, I just came back from St. Thomas where I was a poetry feature, and I brought my writer's group to their group called Pass the Word. And so I've traveled and experienced writing with people all over the place. During COVID, I did an international journaling conference and presented it. So I have been really blessed to be able to share it. And we come in, we do awkward silence, we do a free write. I have a prompt, and it changes each time unless they ask for more time to work on one. But usually it's something new each time we come. And we have about 30 minutes to write and create from it. And then we do sharing and feedback, both of which are optional. It's more important to me that people write without a fear of sharing or not wanting to say what they wrote and feeling pressured. So I encourage the share, and I encourage receiving the feedback, but I don't force it. Everybody's decision is respected, no matter what they choose. I call it a brave space. I've learned about, you know, how safe spaces aren't always safe for marginalized people. So in a brave space, you can say, this is why that could be harmful. This is why that was helpful to me. You can push back, but it's all educated, educational and informative and inspiring, as opposed to confrontational. Making a brave space so everybody can be heard and everybody can be respected. And that's really important to me. So yeah, the writers group has been something that inspires me and keeps me in the game, but it also has done so, I hear, for the community.
This is Erica Wesley with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, and you are listening to WPKN 89.5. And today I'm speaking with poet and painter Shauna Melton. So can you talk a little bit about what circumstances led you to start the writer's group? You know, and quite literally, for some people who have maybe an idea of some creative incubator, talk also a little bit about, like, procedurally, how did you go about creating this space?
So there were the reason I created Lyrical Voices, my open mic, and my writer's group were very much the same, where there was a period of time where we were all writing together, we were all performing together, we were building so much community, and then maybe differences, schedules, people's lives changed, and it dried up, and there was nowhere to go to write in community. And that was something, while in community, that I enjoyed tremendously. And there was a cafe in on Stratford Avenue, closer to Stratford, that had moved to Devon eventually, called Embellish Cafe. And it was owned by Carlene and Eddie, a husband and wife, and they had roses and tea and croissant sandwiches and cakes, and it had white sheer curtains and so much light and candles and jazz, and it was such a beautiful cafe. It was like beyond words, and it was the perfect place to write. It was the perfect place to go and just be and think and be quiet and still. And I really wanted to support their business. And I had this idea already, and I kept going back and forth about it. But when I saw that cafe, I was like, oh, this has to happen. And that's how it started. I put the word out. I invited some people. I was already doing my poetry event, so I had an audience following me. And this group was probably anywhere from 4 people to 20 people. It fluctuated. And everything was really, really exciting, because people were, one thing about adults, we let go of our dreams to pursue our responsibilities. We don't always find a balance. And people who come to my writers group are embracing their dreams again as adults. They're coming back to the center. And a lot of us, for us, that's writing. And so being in that space, giving people that opportunity, it just started meaning so much to me. And eventually, Embellish took off, And I needed another space because the crowds were just a lot for writing. There was not as much quiet or space. And so, you know, we lost our space and I was bouncing around from libraries to, you know, the back of a store to different places, but nothing was regular and nothing was what we needed it to be for the vision and the feeling that we started with. So I would take pauses and I would hold on, and people kept asking me, my friend Marcella Lawson, she kept asking me, Karen Heck, she was one of the first people to walk into my writer's group. May she rest in peace. She passed away November of last year. It's been a year now, and she was one of the first people to join my group consistently since 2005. She's been a presence at least 2005. And, you know, they kept asking me, when are you bringing it back? When are you going to do it? I'm there. When do you do it? And so I said, well, okay. And then City Lights, Suzanne Cashmore invited me to be part of a workshop teaching unhoused people art. And I presented my workshop and our training. And she asked me if I would like to start doing it through City Lights and bringing it back because she really enjoyed the presentation that I gave. And from that point on, consistently, every first and second Saturday, I've been doing it with City Lights for like the last 10 years.
That's amazing. And I really applaud your consistency with this, because so often with creative ideas, we can have momentum in the beginning, but really sustainability is such a core tenet of community wellness and well-being, knowing that you can always enter a space, knowing that that space exists to receive you as a person, but also as a creative. And I'm always inspired when I see the notifications of your writing group, even if I don't attend every session, it's just good to know that it's there and that it is a place for people. I'm wondering if we can pivot a little bit and talk about, you know, how you as a writer and an artist offer inspiration to the group, because you have so many different strategies for that awkward silence, which sometimes I did find awkward because we're used to having busy minds, but you often bring in different prompts. So how does your work as an artist and a poet help you facilitate these sessions?
You know, the first time I did the awkward silence, I was like, I just want to try this out. I actually saw an interview with Erykah Badu where a woman asked if she could be quiet with her. Mm. And in the middle of the interview, they took a minute and they just sat silently. And then they just kept going with the interview. And a few minutes later, Erykah Badu looked back and she said, thank you for that. And I was like, huh. And so my next group, I was like, I'm going to try it. And we did it. And I said, instead of 1 minute, I'm going to push us. We're going to be quiet for five. And it is awkward because you want to start flipping your pencil, tapping mm-hmm. your foot, doing all the things. And really fighting that and honoring the space and honoring what people are doing. I've seen people read the Bible, do Tai Chi, close their eyes, pray, whatever they need to do, as long as it's silent and introspective. And we don't do that. Like, we're in a world where it's like, go, 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 make, do, do, do. Mm-hmm. And that moment to stop is possibly, for many people, the only moment they really stop outside of sleeping, you know, with all these responsibilities. And the next time we had a workshop after the first one, I didn't do it. And mm-hmm. everybody was like, excuse me, what happened? To the awkward silence. I was like, oh, I wasn't sure how you felt about it. And I remember Karen was like, let's go, it's time. And so that just became part of our routine. And I think it's something people really do care about.
Well, before you go on, I will say, I think it is probably one of the most powerful components of the session because of what you just said. We are not quiet enough. Mm-mm. And I think there is something there, like sitting with other people in that level of silence, but feeling the energy that I personally found very inspiring. And I since becoming a parent, I have tried to incorporate more quiet moments into my day. And just having that level of intention, I think, is so nourishing for the creative. So I love that you took something that you experienced and kind of amplified it, and now it's a shared practice within your group.
The last workshop we did, the Saturday that just passed, it was around rest, right? And there's a conversation where we feel guilty for resting. Mm. And there's a time, there's a great documentary, I don't want to say it's great, it's kind of wild, but Killer Mike did a trigger warning documentary on Netflix, and he talks about the ties to slavery and guilt for resting, because it made them vulnerable to being harmed if they were still. Mm-hmm. And so there's a PTSD effect of constantly feeling like we should be in motion, right? There's also how we're taught, work, 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 make money, go, go, go. But especially as creatives, our value is in our time to think. Mm-hmm. When do you come up with your ideas? When do you process how you're going to do things? Sometimes I'm being still, but my mind is going. Sometimes when we're writing for that 30 minutes, it's so quiet and it's the loudest time in our group, because there's so many ideas happening. As an artist, you have to learn how to embrace silence and stillness and thinking, because that's where our ideas exist. That's where we can listen to what we're processing on a daily basis and weed out what we need and pick up the things we want to work from. And if we don't take time to think and rest and be quiet, like, we're just rushing everything. Mm-hmm. There's so much value in processing.
I couldn't agree more. I think it was one of the benefits of the pandemic when we were all socially distancing, and I found so many people were pausing for what may have felt like the first time in their adult life, you know, where there were moments either in the beginning of the day or in the evening where they had a bit of a respite from activity. And yeah. I wish that now, you know, 4 years removed from the pandemic, that some of those practices were still a part of our everyday. I think we're getting back into that hustle culture and that rush culture, and it does affect the way that we create, and it also affects the way that we, you know, we stand in community with other people.
I agree. And I also think that we haven't processed what we survived. And sometimes pushing forward is also part of our survival. That was a lot of loss and a lot of grief. And a lot of us, I know for a fact, have not processed the depth of that time. And sometimes going right back to work and going right back to what we now know isn't really normal, but normal, right? Mm-hmm. Allows us to keep pushing ahead, but those things catch up with you. If you look at like September 11th or even the AIDS epidemic when it was at its height and there was the AIDS quilt, and you know, there was ways that we grieved people. There were ways that we created memorial, like the AIDS quilt, like the wall where the towers used to be. There are ways that we processed what happened, even if it was on a grand level. We never had that with COVID. It just ended, quote unquote ended, which is also debatable, right? Like, and we haven't really processed what is going on. In the writers group, I had a workshop, and it lasted about 3 workshops, where we wrote about COVID and the pandemic. And it was one of the hardest processes because people had to reach back into those feelings and how they lived and watching numbers ticking forward. And, you know, my whole thing for them is, who's going to tell the story if writers don't?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Yes. You just led into exactly what I was thinking. I picked up one of the books I have here because I think that the power of the writer, and in so many ways, the power of the poet, is the lens that we have to observe and often observe with detail.
Yeah.
And I love that writers are able to kind of have a seeing twice experience where we're seeing it once in our bodies and then we're seeing it again in our art. And so I really appreciate when poets create a book or, you know, a zine where they have a specific focus of a moment, maybe a historical lens even, where they're rewriting the experience. And I found myself with a ton of words about the pandemic. And I would just journal really for myself. It's nothing I've shared with other people, but I found the profound sense of silence to be fascinating. Like, it was the first time I felt like I could walk outside and it was actually quiet. And I've been thinking about that because I miss it. I miss, like, driving down the street and there being no cars. I miss being able to walk through grocery aisles, and it really felt like a lonelier experience than it had before because, again, I was able to think. And I think as poets and writers, we're able to put our arms around those kinds of experiences and then put back into community reflections. One of my
favorite courageous act.
One of, because I'm going to ask you who your favorite poet is, but I'll buy you a little time while you think about it. Because one of my favorite poets is Tracy K. Smith. I think that she is absolutely brilliant. And she has a book that won the Pulitzer Prize, and it's called Life on Mars. And she talks about, you know, death through a similar lens that we're talking about, right? Like having some distance between the grief of losing a parent and then writing this book. And the whole backdrop of the book is using the complexity and the depth of the galaxy to explain how deep and wide and vast and curious grief can be. And in a lot of ways, these poems actually kind of can speak to the pandemic because, to your point, there was a lot of grief there. So who's one of your favorite poets, and what are they writing about that kind of always brings you back in for curiosity and reflection?
It's hard to say I have a favorite poet. It's definitely, like you said, one of. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's a lot like music. It depends on my mood, where I'm at in my life. You know, if some guy made me angry, if somebody's making me feel loved, if, you know, if the sun is high or it's been raining too long, it changes. And, you know, I think the people who I recently did a presentation about representation in the arts through the Artist Hub, and I included Nikki Giovanni and Maya Angelou. And I've always been moved by Maya Angelou because of her testimony as much as her work, you know, getting beyond being mute and dealing with facing the things that she experienced, and going from that to being a calypso musician and an actress and an inaugural poet, and, you know, really giving the world. I think Nikki Giovanni and Maya Angelou both gave me permission as a Black woman to talk about my body, to talk about my experience as a woman, to talk about my experience as a Black woman in such an honest and transparent way. And so I definitely hold them high. But I also look at poets that I know, like Elizabeth Velasquez, like Contra and Facile and Rare Epiphany and Tiaka. I write with them in the morning, and they just are so exceptional. I think about Sandra Cisneros, and just so many poets that tell stories and honesty. But if I were to choose now in this moment, I think consistently Nikki Giovanni. She has this poem called The Women Gather that I even created an event after. And I really, really love the concept of that poem and the way women come together to see each other, to help each other heal, and to just bury things that don't serve us.
I love that. You said so much there that is incredible and beautiful. And one of the, not the last episode of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, but the one before it. So that was the February episode. We talked about that Nikki Giovanni documentary that's on HBO Max. Yeah, so good. So good. So as you were talking, I was thinking about her and all her tenacity in that documentary.
It was so inspiring.
You know, I took a lot of things away from that, but one of the things that really was profound to me was the endurance that she has for poetry, that at her age, she still finds beauty in language, but also a use for language. And that really inspires me, because I agree with one of your previous statements that often, you know, we walk into adulthood and we abandon our inner child that was so creative and had so much creative aspiration. And you look at someone like Nikki Giovanni, who in some ways has like a very childlike humor, right? I feel like she's very innocent in that way. And yet through her age and maturity, she has doubled down on creativity and she makes so much room for it in her life. And I found myself hoping that when I get to that age of being well seasoned, I have a litany of creative projects behind me and that I'm carrying forward really into the unknown of old age, a sense of art and culture.
I also look forward to being unapologetic about not having my filter too.
Yes.
Exceptional.
Yes. That too. Absolutely. This is Erica Wesley with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, and you are listening to WPKN 89.5. And today I'm speaking with poet and painter Shauna Melton. So we're talking about so much here, and I want to kind of turn the corner a little bit, because I think we're hovering around a concept that I'm very, very passionate about. And I know you believe, like I believe, poetry is literary art, and literary art is very much at the core of the umbrella around arts and culture. And with that comes art accessibility, in my opinion, knowing that we can create art, but make art specifically accessible to people of all ages and people of all backgrounds. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, how you bring art into community and what are some of the demographics within community that you love to create in the most?
I really love creating. The demographic for me isn't like age or race or class. Mm-hmm. The demographic for me is eagerness and willingness and vulnerability. There's nothing worse than loving something and forcing someone else to do it. There's something so wonderful about people who are like, yes, let's go, you know? And that is my favorite demographic, people who want it. And that can vary between ages. That can vary between race, class, culture, whatever. It's just excitement. I love going in a classroom of young people and sharing my work. I have this lecture that I do, and it's called Art Makes Dreams Real. And I did it for 400 students at the beginning of the school year. And they had question after question after question. And this boy was like, I bet you can't hear color. I bet you that. I said, I bet you I can. And I bet you it's caused him to say that. And I bet you I'll tell you all about it. And here it is. And he was like, oh, my God, I feel seen. And that was such a good moment. You know what I mean? Like, that was so exciting to me. And then I also love when I was in St. Thomas, I did a water workshop. And I was hesitant because it's an island. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they know a lot about water. But the conversation I had was, we rely on water here differently than you do where you are. You know, this can be a feast or famine. This can make or break how we exist, which is why it's so clean, which is why they tend to nature in a different way than we do. And so listening to their perspective on the water they swim in, the water that they rely on, is a very different conversation than the one I have about going to Seaside. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I loved that. Like, but I love in either space that they were ready and excited and wanting to do the work, wanting to share their stories. When I was working at LifeBridge, we had the Urban Scholars Program and we did the Beloved Community Mural. I was able to bring the students information for the 6 principles of nonviolence. And after I did the workshop and I presented, one of our students said, why don't we ever learn about this? You know, why don't people teach us this? People always teach young people about, you know, fighting and defending and protecting yourselves. They can hear that anywhere, music, streets, classrooms, wherever. But you don't hear about Dr. Kingston's principles of nonviolence the way you should. And that, what if kids were more equipped with that tool? Mm-hmm. You know, and so seeing them and helping them create art for their letter and really manifesting the conversations and feeding the information I taught them back to me and why they created it, like, that was powerful. That is powerful. That's part of my why. Like, really, if I know it and I can share it, I love the process of somebody not knowing something and I guide them through it. And on the other side, they've mastered it in their own way and how they need to for their life or their work. So, yeah, my favorite demographic is willingness.
I love that so much. And it's so beautifully said. And I think you're answering a question that I had around, you know, how does poetry advance arts and culture and community? And you're saying it so succinctly. And I too view poetry as something that changes people. It changes people in so many unique ways, similar to music. And once you are changed as a person, you walk differently, you talk differently, and you begin to share what you've learned, not always in some pedagogical form, but authentically, just in like a very casual way. And I think poetry is a language that speaks to all people. And it's also something that people carry with them, almost like a physical object. It shapes how we walk and how we move through life.
I agree.
So what do you envision for writers in this area? If you had the ability to just make up what we all could experience in the next couple of years, what would that vision be?
My vision would be that publishers, people who, you know, magazines, people who have platforms that are larger, were able to witness, support, and experience in multiple ways the creativity that exists here, verbally and visually. I think that, you know, having the documented versions. One thing I know, and I emphasize this to my group, is that if, heaven forbid, right, life proves to be as fickle as it has proved to be repeatedly. Mm-hmm. We're not here tomorrow. What have you done with your work that allows people to reflect on who you were, on that allows them to grieve and hold on to parts of you? When Maya Angelou transitioned, I kept listening to her poems. I kept listening to her speeches. What if we didn't have access to that, you know? What happens if you don't put your work in the world? You take it with you. And I encourage people who want to share, who feel like they have that fire of sharing and putting their work in the world, to do it in whatever ways they can. You know, self-publishing is a way, but I want it to be archived. Bridgeport has had a renaissance happening for decades, and people sort of hover over us and then keep going. And the people who have pulled themselves out and made themselves relevant in other spaces, it's so important to also direct those other spaces back into this one. Because when I go to an open mic and I hear these vulnerable poems, when I go to a writer's group and people are writing about these stories that can help heal and save and free people, just simply by making them feel less alone, like a unicorn. You know, we go through things, we feel like a unicorn, and you don't know 50 other people around you are going through it. Mm-hmm. But you do hear that when you hear a poem. And so using what we go through, using our art as a way to connect, I want that. But I think people who exist here are fully capable of holding space on a national level and saying, this is where I started. This is where it began. I see that for myself. And I see that for a lot of people who put in work. We put it, poetry is not just sitting by the water and, you know, rhyming things. That's part of it. But it's sharing personal stories. You'll hear stories about, you know, rape and grief and loss and separation. You wrote a poem about, you read the poem about domestic violence. You hear about environmental justice, social justice. There's so many things that show up that need to be told. And this city experiences all of that, environmental justice, social justice, all the, you know, trauma responses and, you know, learning how to teach kids social emotional learning. When you think about teaching SEL, think about how poetry opens you up to that. I have this workshop and it's I Am Not, But If I Were. And so it's like, I am not a cow, but if I were, I would moo, I'd have spots, I'd be black and white. And so we did it collectively, and I am not a cow. And the kids were adding like, but if I were, I would this, I would that. And one girl shouted from the back, I would be sold in a market and sell, I would be put in a market and sold for parts. And then I was like, yeah, that's also true, right? And so digging into those more complicated levels and understanding how the world works and earth works and life works, like that happens. And when people talk about Bridgeport and they talk about what it doesn't have, you're missing so much of what it does have. You're missing so much of these testimonies. You're missing so many opportunities to hold space for people to say, this is what I've been through. And, you know, when I was doing Lyrical Voices, not only were they doing that, but then they would get off stage and I could say, somebody surround them so they're okay. And five poets would go surround them. You know, you don't feel alone when you do it. Give them space, but let them deal with it if they need you. Okay. And it turns into us protecting each other, holding each other up. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever experienced. And it becomes something that you crave and you need. Because once you know it's possible and it can come through you, it's like, it's amazing. And I hope that's something that moves beyond me, that there's some other generation, hopefully the next of poets who listen, ask me, ask other poets around me and my peers what we did so that they can carry that forward. And I hope that people witness what we do and want to carry it out because the work is beautiful.
I agree. And I thank you so much for sharing all of that. I hope that our listeners are inspired by this conversation and that if you do not view yourself as a poet, you know and recognize that you can always enjoy poetry. You can enjoy it by reading, listening. There's so many open mics around this area that are showcasing, to Shauna's point, really amazing local talent. And poetry, like writing, is at the intersection of art and culture. And I hope that this conversation inspired you. We have a few minutes left. I want to read a poem. If there's a poem, Shauna, that you want to read, let me know.
Okay.
I'm going to read a poem that I wrote. I've actually never read this to anyone. outside of my spouse. So you all are in for a treat. It's called The Greatest Show, and it is about P.T. Barnum and a woman that he owned. Before he went...
Joyce, hi.
Yes. Before he went under the bloodshot and canary color tent, there was already a spectacle. Before any flames were swallowed up by hungry bellies, and before Dumbos ever took flight, Joyce was Barnum's first attraction. Unquestionably, the most astonishing and interesting curiosity in the world. 9 to 9, 3 to 5, 6 to 10, onlookers staggered up hotel stairs, carouseled around the old nurse, watching the gray clouds fill her eyes. The wrinkles, thick, dark, and leather-like, were a map taking each of them nowhere that could be found from here. Perched up in a bed of sorrows, she whispered songs to the beating echo of African hills. This is what kept her alive now. The 46 pounds of a woman used to wipe, dress, and nurse the man called our founding father. But what is a father without a mother? The birth of a nation began not in Joyce's womb, but in her arms. And you know that kid walking down Washington Avenue doesn't even know that this is his history. That The Greatest Show was nothing without the original, authentic, and indisputable black mother of a white son. He'd think it was a joke. And that's the thing about jesting. At some point, it's just not funny. So I wrote that poem after I did some local history at our fabulous downtown Bridgeport Library. And so much of what you talked about in terms of getting people involved with different modes of inspiration and different types of promptings really does have a good connection to the way that we create. And so I like to read this poem even in my personal time because it reminds me that there's so much around us that can inspire us to write. So we are going to wrap up very quickly. Shauna?
Yes, I can read a poem. I just want to say, though, that that poem is so important. And I've been doing historical preservation with the Freeman Center and the history of Little Liberia and understanding there's so much Black history, Black free Black people history. That story of Joyce Heiss and how she was put on display and tying that to the story of Sajeti Bartman, Sarah Bartman, mm-hmm. Venus Hottentot, and how Black women's bodies were used as exhibitions and, you know, how we've had to fight to honor who we are. Like, that's such an important piece, and I'm so happy you shared it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So I'll read my piece. It's called Ode to Queen. And let's dedicate this to Joyce and Sarah Bartman and all the women, all the sisters. Mm-hmm. An ode to queens. We greet one another with offerings of love. We call each other sisters, acknowledging the light that beams through our spirit. And into this connection, there is praise and our welcoming. People stop and stare at the sound rejoicing from our lips, and we unapologetically bask in it. Is a Black girl, woman, elder proverb. It means there is injustice here. It means watch out because there might be injustice everywhere if someone doesn't fix it, Jesus. It means they are trifling. It means watch out. It means I see you. We call and begin our conversation like the last was never complete. Girl is a Black girl, woman, elder proverb. It means hello. It means listen. It means it was crazy and I can't wait to tell you. It means what a shame. It means I'm devastated. It means I'm delighted. It means I need you right now. We want to see each other happy, getting all the kisses, support, attention, and joy that our heart desires. We know that it is hard to mend cracks, but it's not impossible. We remind the other that there is life after loss, life after defeat. We remind the other that we only need ourselves to exist as ourselves, and all else is a compliment. So what of mourning the living and the stars who be?
Support for WPKN comes from New Haven's Trinity Church on the Green, hosting a benefit concert on Saturday, April 13th, with Sweet Honey and the Rock. During its 51-year history, this African-American a cappella ensemble has used its powerful vocals to enlighten, entertain, and inspire audiences throughout the United States and the world. Proceeds from this special event will benefit Trinity Church's music program. More information and tickets are available at trinitynewhaven.org.
Support for WPKN comes from Save the Sound, leading environmental action in our region. From Connecticut's Litchfield Hills to Long Island's North Shore, Save the Sound partners with individuals and communities to fight climate change, save endangered lands, protect the sound and its rivers, and work with nature to restore ecosystems. More information on how to get involved is at SaveTheSound.org.
This is Hazel Kahn inviting you to tune into Tidings on Wednesday to hear John Christian Pfeiffer, former veteran of the funeral industry, talk to us about natural burial practices and the protection and stewardship of land through conservation burial. Wednesday, 6:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. Please join us if you can. Thank you.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
You can ride your bike in the 16th annual Rock to Rock Earth Day Ride in the New Haven area on Saturday, April 27th, to raise funds for more than 20 local environmental groups. You can do one of five rides from 2 miles to 62 miles. Enjoy music and food at the Green Fair in East Rock Park and learn about the important work of participating groups. To register, visit rocktorock.org. That's rocktorock.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Schnetzer, the president and CEO of the Connecticut Institute for Refugees and Immigrants, known in our communities as CIRI. Over our 104-year history, CIRI has built a legacy of leadership, compassionate service, and effective advocacy for immigrants and refugees. We welcome and support newcomers fleeing war, persecution, and poverty, providing safety, a pathway to healing, and the opportunity to thrive in our communities. CIRI's holistic service model assists clients as they rebuild their lives. We do not do this alone. We need your help in making all welcome in our communities. To learn more about CIRI's services and how you may help, CIRICT.org or 203-336-0141.
Binnie Klein here, and I want to thank you on behalf of all my colleagues at WPKN for your generous contributions of your used cars or other vehicles. Did you know that the car donations from 300 WPKN listeners have helped us raise over $180,000 during the last 5 years? The condition of your vehicle doesn't matter, and it doesn't even have to be a car. We can accept boats, RVs, motorcycles, and even airplanes. Even a used jetpack. Just go to our website at WPKN.org, click the support tab, the donate vehicles button, and fill out the online form. You can also just call 877-WPKN-CAR or 877-975-6227. In either case, an agent will guide you through the simple process of making the donation and will arrange to have your vehicle picked up from its current location. you will receive a tax deduction and the deep gratitude of the WPKN community. Thank you again to all of you who have donated vehicles over the years and for your support of listener-supported community radio WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM. Bye.